You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for today. We're lucky today to have Kevin Gallagher with us. Kevin is Associate Director in Core Science Systems with the U.S. Geological Survey. Welcome, Kevin.
Well, thank you very much, Curtis. It's a pleasure to be on.
Glad to have you with us today. We've had a lot of, I don't know if discussion is the right word, but we certainly had a lot of information being shared back and forth with the listeners to the show and members of our organization and others in the surveying community in particular who may or may not be members of our association, but we hope they are, about everything that has to do with what's going on in surveying, and certainly with this program, the 3DIP program we're going to talk about today. We, as you may know, we've sent letters to a variety of legislators throughout the process of getting the program evaluated and approved and expressing our support because, like so many others that are affected by what's going on with the data, we certainly are. And so it's important to us to be a part of the process and also important for us to know more about the program. And that's obviously the big reason I wanted to have you on the show today because I know you've been very involved in it.
Well, first of all, thank you, and I can't thank you enough for your support and the support of your members. We believe strongly in the program, and we do need support in this kind of a federal budget climate, but we think that the program provides enough benefits to we'll talk more about it today, to a wide array of people that it's really a program that should be supported and believed in.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, maybe we can take this in steps, but maybe a good way to start is just to have some conversation or at least let you talk to us about the logic behind the program itself and why it's being pursued
Sure.
and implemented.
Sure. Well, if you don't mind, Curtis, I would like to just provide a little bit of background on the U.S. Geological Survey for the listeners
Absolutely.
That may not be fully aware of our organization, and just quickly dispense of that. It's actually difficult to describe the USGS mission in a few words, but I'll try. The short answer is it's unbiased science for the nation. So we have a motto called Science for a Changing World, and we're somewhat unique. We have no regulatory or resource management responsibility. So we have over about 8,000 federal scientists and support staff in over 400 locations around the U.S. You may be familiar, and your members may be familiar with certain things like our hazards program, where we do earthquake, volcano, and landslide monitoring, or the 5,000-plus stream gauges that monitor water availability or water quality. We have a branch that studies ecosystems, invasive species, wildlife disease. We do resource assessments for energy, mineral, and natural gas potential. And, of course, we're the largest civilian mapping agency. So we operate the Landsat 7 and 8 satellites. And probably the thing that your members are most familiar with is our topographic and geologic mapping programs and our quad maps that we've been producing really since our inception in the 1800s. We're part of the Department of Interior, so we do work with other bureaus, as well as a lot of partners, universities, state and local collaborators, and, of course, the private industry. So that's a very quick summary of the USGS. And this 3D elevation program comes to us out of our national mapping program. So we refer to that today as our National Geospatial Program. About a decade ago, we converted from paper maps to digital. And it's that program that in 2011 conducted, in a partnership with other federal agencies, the NEA study, the National Enhanced Elevation Assessment. And it was that assessment that was actually contracted out to the private sector. It was awarded to Dewberry. And they led this effort to do, I think, three really important things that really make it kind of a watershed study in our industry. First was it conducted an inventory of publicly available LIDAR. That's one of the things that I think is really important about this program is acquiring data and putting it into the public domain. the second important thing it did was it did a requirements analysis. So it looked at the various requirements of both federal agencies, state agencies, local governments, and even some private sector organizations, and did an assessment of the kind of requirements people had for high-resolution elevation data. And then the last and most important thing I think it did was it conducted a cost-benefit analysis of what value a national data set like that would bring to the nation. That cost-benefit analysis showed conservatively, several billion dollars in benefits to the nation. And it was that study really that founded this 3D elevation program that we're talking about today.
Thanks for the background on that. I was thinking as you were describing the organization and the things that it does and has done over time, I actually made a note to myself as you were going through quad sheets, because
yeah.
I think you and I talked about it in our little pre-interview that people my age at least are emotionally attached to the quad sheets, and I can remember lamenting when they were going digital before we all understood what digital really would do for us. But that, and then you mentioned stream gauges, and that brought the idea of benchmarks, which obviously is something very important to the surveying community too. So it's good to have you explain the broader context of the organization, simply because in many cases most of our people only know about it or know what it does as regards to how it affects their practice, which is those things we just talked about. So
sure,
thanks for
yeah.
doing that.
Yeah,
and NSPS
sure thing.
Members, of course, will remember USGS because of Jim Plasker, who has been really involved with us. And, of course, he was over at ASPRS after he retired as well and was one of our presidents. So
absolutely.
Those are kind of connections that people know about, so it's really good for them to hear more of what USGS is all about and what it does. I don't live that far from headquarters, and I've had the opportunity to be over there a number of times, oftentimes when presentations are going on about things that may have occurred and projects that have been done. And it's just really, enlightening for one thing, but exciting, really, to even come by and hear some of the things that happen that you don't think about on a daily basis.
Yeah, that is so true. And, I've been with the USGS since 2002, and I'm still every day amazed at the breadth and the depth of our science, the examples that come out from our various offices around the nation. It's always fascinating.
I remember being over there once years ago. I can't even tell you how long it's been, but there was a gentleman there that I was able to meet, and he perhaps was doing a presentation, but he was talking about his activities. I think Antarctica is where he was,
mm-hmm.
where he had been, and it was just fascinating to hear some of the things that were going on. And then, of course, when we listen to our members, particularly the ones who live out west, they know a lot of the stories of the surveys that went on out there and led to the maps later on, and those are pretty exciting to hear too sometimes.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up our history there, because the early surveys that were led by the USGS, and in fact one of the Powell surveys, were led by John Wesley Powell, who actually became the second director of the U.S. Geological Survey after that. But we really recognize in hindsight that those early surveys created the data and the information that underpinned the expansion of the West and drove everything from agriculture to mining and all of the other exploration. And this 3DEP program that we're talking about today, we believe although it's a modern topographic survey, because it's delivering data that is so high in resolution, it's really transformative. And we feel that it's just as transformative as those early surveys were. It's, as you know, and I'm talking to you and your members, so you know what LIDAR is and the impact of it. But I like to say to a layman, it's like putting on a pair of new glasses and seeing the world in the kind of detail that you could never see it in before. And so a national data set like this, we believe, is the beginning of a burgeoning new industry that not only can use this data today and have it immediately provide value to civil engineering or agriculture and a number of things, but also that it's something that can be value added to, that it can, analytics can be conducted against this data, and a whole industry of professionals can evolve from that.
Yeah, you had mentioned that when we were chatting earlier about this burgeoning new industry and using it, using the data for value-added services, and that was interesting to me, and I hope it will be to our audience today too, because sometimes when new technologies come along, our tendency, I don't want to say our, I've been a surveyor all my life, so I'm not just talking about our members, I'm talking about me too, but mm-hmm. but our tendencies have been to learn to utilize data, learn to utilize whatever is created, whether it's new equipment or whether it's new data, without taking advantage of how we could utilize it and provide value-added services. So I hope a lot of our people will take that opportunity, because I think you're right. I think there are lots of a whole wide array of things that can be used for.
Excuse me. Absolutely. We see a number of applications which we can talk about during our time today that can come out of it. You mentioned the quads, and I did want to put a plug in that we've taken all of our historic topographic quads and we've scanned them in high resolution and made them available on the internet for download. So it can be downloaded, and of course it can be used. Or it can be, it's georeference, so you could actually put it on your handheld and sync it to a GPS. Or it could be printed, and so you can have that paper copy. I know a lot of people love to have that paper copy in their hands, and we've kept our quad format even in our new digital products that are distributed as GeoPDFs. We've kept that same format because it is iconic, and it is incredibly valuable in the way that it had been delivered. And so even though we're all digital in the quads, we're still doing our best to provide a product that people value and one that's versatile in the sense of use on a handheld, printed as a paper copy, or data downloaded to your local GIS, all those things. So we haven't walked away from our topographic quad sheet. In fact, I think we're investing more in it than ever in areas like Alaska, where we're doing a modern U.S. Digital topo product today, trying to cover the state of Alaska, which right. is an order of magnitude higher quality than they've had over the last 50, 60 years.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you added that into our conversation, and it's just in time for us to take our first break. So let's go do that, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Sure thing.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. and listen to The Doctor's Lounge, where you get a private insight into the conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. Join us Thursday, 8 a.m. every week.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Quick steaks are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden steaks, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about Quick Steaks, go to www.quicksteak.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everyone, with Kevin Gallagher. Today, we're we've been talking about USGS in a more general sense, and Kevin has given us some information that will ease our mind that the quads are not dead forever. We can still get to them and use them in a variety of ways, so that's always good to know about. And we'd begun our discussion on the 3DIP program and actually talked a little bit how all those things integrate together. Maybe it would be good for the audience, for whatever portion of the reason for pursuing 3DIP you hadn't covered already, maybe talk about that a little bit.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I mentioned quickly that we're seeing it as a modern topographic survey, and so that's a key aspect to it. The other key aspect to it is we're planning on using exclusively the private industry in terms of gathering this data. This really is a partnership program, and I really want you to get a sense for that right from the beginning. The USGS, we don't have the budget to fund a collection of this across the entire country. We don't have our own airplanes and instruments, and rightfully so, the private sector has the expertise and the capacity to do this. And so the whole approach from the very beginning, after it was really clear from the NEA study, the National Enhanced Elevation Assessment, that this had tremendous value to the nation, that we were going to have to build this on a partnership program. So I chair a federal interagency executive committee called the 3DEP Executive Forum, which includes partners such as FEMA, NOAA, the Army Corps, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, et cetera. And so we work together to pool our resources. This makes more efficient use of our taxpayer dollars. It reduces duplication, increases efficiency and economies of scale, and all those kinds of things. We also have implemented a acquisition strategy where we've put in place a contract that can be used by multiple federal agencies, can also be used by state agencies, it can be used by tribal governments. Our strategy here is to pool our resources and use this contract vehicle as a preferred source to tap into the expertise in the private sector and try to gather this data in large blocks to increase economies of scale, deliver that data to the USGS where we can quality assure it and then serve it out to the public through our automated system, which we refer to as the National Map. It's a tall order because there's a lot of partners and a lot of stakeholders in it, and there's a lot of coordination that's required, both from a budgeting standpoint but also from an execution standpoint. And I'll give you a couple of really great examples of how it's working. So Hurricane Sandy came up the East Coast here back in 2011 and did a lot of devastation across a 5, 6, 7 state area. Since then, we have been working with our partners at the state level, at the county level, with some of the organizations I mentioned, FEMA, Army Corps of Engineers, et cetera, to pool our resources and take advantage of different opportunities like supplemental funding that came to support the rebuilding. And we have cooperated to acquire LIDAR over that impact area. And do it in a way that we're not duplicating our efforts, doing it to a single standard specification, and then delivering that into the public domain as a resource for anyone to get at and use. That's an example of how this program is structured and how we hope it to function over the next 5 to 8 years it's going to take to cover the nation with a national data set for LIDAR. So I've laid a lot on the table there. Maybe I'll stop there and tell me you can react.
Well, I think it's very interesting concepts and one that I guess folks that come from our point of view, primarily all those private sector guys, have thought about for a really long time, not necessarily just the private sector industry part of it in terms of use of the private sector, which is a great partnership. I think it does work well. but really the whole pooling thing. Because any of us who deal with the variety of agencies have long looked at that as a really positive thing to move forward with doing, because now I think it's probably easier, maybe easier is not the right word, but it, from our perspective, it's easier to do for you guys because you can capture so much data that's useful to so many people, and it's not department-specific or project-specific. It can just be used in so many ways. So that's certainly great news to know that that's the approach that's being taken here. And I'm sure that will begin to spread itself through other areas in the government as well.
Right. So you mentioned the various uses, and you're exactly right. I mean, this is a data that you can capture that has value, and that the NEA study I mentioned documented 602 different business uses across a number of federal agencies and state and local and private industries. So I'll just quickly run through some of the things that the study identified. So kind of a bread and butter one that's been around for a while is this flood risk mitigation or flood modeling. So, of course, you can imagine the more accurate your elevation data, the more clear your flood modeling is going to be. It can be the difference between a house being in the floodplain and not. Civil engineering and infrastructure management requires high accurate elevation. Precision agriculture, more and more we're seeing a whole industry evolve in terms of automating agriculture. And the more detail you understand the elevation, the more efficient your farming practices are going to be. Some really interesting burgeoning areas that are just coming on the scene include land navigation and safety, where particularly long-haul truck companies are manufacturers are designing trucks to be elevation aware and shift differently based on upcoming topography to create additional fuel efficiency. Of course, there's just a tremendous number of science applications, from understanding hazards to landslide assessment to understanding the cryosphere. You mentioned Antarctica. We do a lot of work up there. Some of the things that we're doing up there and understanding that environment provide a great context for understanding what's happening worldwide. And so what we're finding is there almost doesn't seem to be a limit to the creativity of the use of this high-accuracy elevation data, from aviation safety to forest management to geologic resource assessment. And so you're right. The bottom line is that many agencies, whether you're the Department of Agriculture or whether you're FEMA, who's interested in emergency management, or whether the Army Corps and you're interested in engineering levees, they have a great interest in this data, and so it makes a whole lot of sense for us to be working together to acquire it to a single specification and then sharing it. And so, of course, having it make sense and pulling it off are two different things. It takes a lot of work and coordination, but that's what we're trying to do. And we're getting great support from our federal partners.
And that whole idea of the lessening, I guess, of the whole proprietary attitude of, well, I need my data for my particular purpose and that kind of thing, recognition that this data is so universally usable that one need not worry about those. And obviously there are portions of government service where certain data has to always be held closely, and everybody understands that. I don't think anybody has a problem with that. But it was interesting, and you mentioned this the other day, too, and I was intrigued by it, even made a note about it on the elevation awareness, the long-haul trucking thing. When you talked about that, it just sort of made my mind start wandering all over the place to just looking at the immeasurable applications that could come from this that we haven't even begun to think about yet.
Well, exactly. That's why, you know, I'm very fond of saying that the use of this data is only limited to the creativity of the of our scientists or our engineers. You know, I talk about a burgeoning industry, and at first it's kind of hard to catch until you start looking at just the myriad number of examples that are coming out. Just a couple more off the top of my head. You know, we've seen, of course, the oil and gas industry has been using high-resolution elevation data for pipeline routing and construction planning and encroachment control, things like that, for many years. But we're seeing things like Los Angeles County developing a solar map, informing homeowners about the solar potential of rooftops by looking at high-resolution elevation data. So they're calculating the pitch of the roof, angle toward the sun, and turning that into an economic estimate for solar potential. We're seeing scientists using some of this data to uniquely identify vegetation. So the resolution is high enough that they can identify single species or structure, and then use that to understand a potential fuel load for wildfires or carbon storage from carbon sequestration associated with just the annual cycle. It's really fascinating to see the number of applications that are coming out of the use of this data.
Yeah, we talked about that already, and it's just really amazing to me. You mentioned the flood risk mitigation earlier, and when you and I were talking on the phone the other day, you had mentioned some discussion you had had with some folks in North Carolina about utilizing the data, and I actually talked to Ken Ash down there last week, and he gave me a lot of information about what they were thinking, and taking that information and using it with sometimes what surveyors do. We talk about the letters of map amendment and all those kind of things, and he was explaining to me how they're looking at the relationship between a structure and a flood boundary that it shows up from this data, not necessarily property boundaries. Obviously, that's what surveyors do. But it was pretty intriguing to me to hear all the things that he was talking about, that what these uses are going to do just in that one particular area. So, again, that's something that's of interest to our profession, because we deal with the land, and it's hard sometimes to take old or even new maps, for example, and try to figure out whether a property or a structure actually lies within a flood hazard area. And this tool is going to really facilitate that. So, that's really interesting. I see we're about ready for another break here. Maybe we can pick up on that a little bit before we come back, and then maybe we can talk about the status of how far are we away from actually being able to utilize the information.
Absolutely.
Let's do that break right now.
Okay, will do.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details, or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings for Medicine on Call and participate in a lively conversation. Learn what's happening behind the headlines in medicine. Understand Obamacare. And learn how to protect yourself and navigate the system.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Attention surveyors. Are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back with Kevin Gallagher with us today. We're going on our third segment here, and as is always the case, when we begin the third segment, we have our Parker Davis Quick Stakes contest for the day, and where I ask our guest a question, and the first person listening to email to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com will be the winner for the day. So, Kevin, the question today is, what year did you begin at USGS?
Ah, okay. Well, thanks for that question. I began at USGS the summer, July of 2002.
2002 is the answer we're looking for, so hopefully someone will send in that answer and be the winner for today. Before we went to the break, Kevin, you were talking about a number of things, and I didn't want to cut that conversation short, so if we need to continue to talk about that, I know we will talk about status of where we are in the process of implementation and approvals and all those things that are required to get the program moving fully, but I don't want to leave out anything else that you might want to touch on in terms of our discussion up to this point.
Okay, yeah, great. Well, you mentioned North Carolina and flooding, and let me just say a couple things about that, because I think one of the things I haven't talked about yet is the role of the states. For years now, actually, one of the things that the USGS, I think, one of our strengths is that you can imagine it's very difficult to do anything at the scale of the United States. So when you talk about those early surveys, they were years long. In fact, the most recent full coverage of the United States with our topographic quad series using manual techniques, that was a 55-year process. But once again, this is one of our strengths, is that we understand that there's a huge landmass here, a large scope of area, and a significant challenge to get that data to the level of accuracy that is needed. And so we've developed over the years, you know, methods by which we stay at it. You know, we'll use methodology to focus on different parts of the country and work on it over many years. And so this is really no different here, except we really want to emphasize the importance and the role of states in this. For a number of years, we've had what we call geospatial liaisons as part of our program. They're federal employees, but they're located out in the field, oftentimes in state capitals. And their job is to know the state, or maybe one or two or three states, and understand and know their geospatial requirements, understand the points of contact in the various state houses, as well as the various departments of transportation or natural resources or whatever, and really try to pull the states into this national partnership. And we've been very successful in this regard. We've got a fantastic project right now ongoing in Alaska. It's really a model, I think, state, federal, private partnership, where our Assistant Secretary for Water and Science at the Department of Interior, Ann Castle, she chairs this executive committee that includes a lieutenant governor from Alaska and a number of federal agencies, and we're mapping that state. We're bringing modern elevation data and a modern digital topographic quad series to that state. In fact, we're nearing 50% coverage of IFSAR in that state, which is a major accomplishment given the size of the state. And so coming back home here to North Carolina, North Carolina has been a state that I think has demonstrated a lot of vision in this regard for many years. It was the late 90s, early 2000s that they covered the entire state with LIDAR. Of course, not the same resolution that we're proposing today as 3DEP, as part of the 3DEP program. John Dorman down there, who recently came and actually presented on the Hill in support of 3DEP, he's been a strong leader for many years. And you see in North Carolina the kinds of applications that they've used it for. And the flood inundation, the flood risk modeling one, is a great one. And you're right, the difference, you know, the difference between understanding the level, the elevation, is the difference between being in the floodplain or not being in the floodplain. And you, as you can imagine, that's a pretty controversial issue when it comes to insurance, when it comes to taxation, and all those issues with the state. And so North Carolina is now actually committed to work with us in the partnership to recapture the entire state using the 3DEP specification. And some of the thoughts in their mind go beyond the basics of just flood inundation modeling and really go to things like risk assessment. And they're doing some really creative things like meshing their understanding with elevation with the understanding of their structures, and they're able to do assessments of what's a first-story building, what's a second-story building, et cetera, and to not only have an understanding of whether or not something will flood, but the extent to which it might flood. It'll flood the first floor and the second floor, for example, or, you know, won't flood at all. And it's these kinds of information that allows them to do some really advanced thinking in terms of preparedness and response. And so I think they're a great example of a state that's providing a lot of leadership and the kind of partnership that we want to have, not with just North Carolina or Alaska, but with all the states. And that's going to be a key factor, I think, as we think about doing this over multiple years, going back to this idea that you can't just capture a data set like this all at once.
Yeah, that was actually had come to mind as you were talking about the North Carolina experience. And I think I mentioned to you before that I know some folks in John's group that Gary Thompson in particular, who's one of our past presidents and a longtime friend of mine, was very involved in the control side of that. But what it brought to mind was scheduling, because you were talking about projects going on in Alaska, what's going on in North Carolina, and obviously this project is not something you're just going to flip a switch and it's done. Does that play a role in terms of scheduling when you have a proactive state like that?
Absolutely it does. You know, sometimes I like to say we schedule via the golden rule. In other words, he who has the gold makes the rules.
Yeah, one of my bosses told me that once.
but of course, that's not always the case. In fact, as we think about this, it's pretty complicated. And let me just share with you some of our thoughts on approach. And it's going to evolve over time, and it may not be perfect, but. Certainly today, if a state or a federal agency comes to us with money, and I haven't talked about matching yet, but a big part of our program and why we have liaisons is to actively seek out partners that are interested in a particular area, and we'll take, you know, so let's say FEMA has a few million dollars and they're interested in a particular area, we'll seek out partners in that area, and sometimes we'll pull together universities or funding from the state and funding from another source, maybe even a nonprofit organization, and we'll try to pool those resources and make that acquisition a little bit bigger and knock off a bigger chunk of geography as we try to, you know, go across the country. But, you know, going back to this idea of how do you plan for something like that, so, you know, definitely if a interested party comes with money and there's a particular geography that they're interested in, you know, we're going to go there. But what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to leverage that partnership program to expand that and get more coverage. There are particular parts of the country. I mentioned this NEA study, this National Enhanced Elevation Assessment, where it did this requirements analysis of all these different stakeholders. And so there are parts of the country where there's a great overlap in interest. And so those parts of the country definitely come up in priority. So examples would be along the coastlines, where you know, there's a great cross-section of interested parties. Other parts of the country might be places where are prone to flooding or places that are prone to other types of hazards, wildfires, et cetera. And so we do have these requirements that, that help drive and guide us as to where to go next. But what we're trying to do to get out ahead of all this is actually we're doing a lot of acquisition planning right now. And you might be familiar with the fact that a couple weeks ago we released what we call a broad agency announcement through FedBizOps to kind of, that was our way of making the whole country aware of our plans and what this program is. And what we're asking for in that BAA is we're asking for people to think 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years down the road, what are the projects that you're interested in, and make proposals to us for, you know, this type of data acquisition. So what we're looking for in those proposals is folks that have money, hopefully, but if not, have interest, and they have proposing a strategy that is along the lines of what we want to support in this program, which is this acquisition to the, you know, with the private sector. Use of our GPSI contract will be preferred, but the key, this, you know, the key will be, can we put this into a partnership program, and can we expand the coverage? And so what we're trying to do with this BAA and with this 3 to 4 year acquisition plan we're going to put together is we're going to try to anticipate where those opportunities are on the landscape that we can add USGS funding to, that we can bring partners to, and try to methodically cross the country using that approach. That's why I mentioned right when I started that this was going to likely evolve, because, you know, I'm assuming, let's just imagine that we start on this and then a major event happens. You know, we seem to have major events in this country every few years, and sometimes that's a major driver. So the example I already gave today, Sandy Hurricane was a major driver over a 5-6 state impact area that led to a major acquisition and a lot of cooperation. Any event like that could certainly mean that we'll have to adjust our acquisition plan as we go. But the better understanding we have of where people's interests are and what consortiums are already available to work, the better we're going to be at projecting that. And the last thing I'll say about this is something that I often say is that, you know, for two major points. One is for every dollar that someone invests, you know, if you just say, I want to acquire some LIDAR, why would I want to do this? Why would I want to you partner with the USGS to do this? Well, we're very effective at bringing partner dollars to the table. So for every dollar invested, we bring generally between 5 and 9 partnership dollars to that agreement. So there's a great deal of leveraging. That's the first reason why I might want to do it. Secondly, the contract.
Before we do that, Kevin, we're right at a break. I don't want you to get in the middle of something. So
sure.
Let's take our last break, and we'll come back and pick up on that.
Yeah, we'll pick up on that. Great.
Thanks.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back with our last segment today with Kevin Gallagher. And before we went to break, you were talking about leveraging and partnering and that kind of thing, and I kind of cut you off a little bit, so let's follow up with that.
Sure. Now, just real quickly, we were talking about how do you go about doing this and acquiring this data across the country, and the importance of doing it through a partnership program. And there was really three big points I was going to make about why a state or a local government may be interested in partnering in this program. And one I mentioned already is the leveraging of the funding. So for every dollar they invest, we're generally able to pull five or up to $9 of partners to the table, and that's really effective at expanding the area of data that's available to you and also driving the cost down. We also make it easy in terms of acquisition because we've already got acquisition in place to a host of professionals in this space that provide great service. But lastly, probably the most important point is at some point there's a tipping point, right, where we talk about how do you go methodically and cover the country, how do you make the decisions of where to go next. It's more difficult in the beginning when there's only 4% of the nation is covered with high resolution LIDAR. But when you get into year three, year four, and you're approaching 50% of the nation covered, it becomes a whole lot easier. It becomes a tipping point at which a lot of times stakeholders that are interested in data, it may already exist. And so, rather than funding something brand new, it might already be there at your disposal. And so I think that there's a lot of reasons why partners and stakeholders would want to be interested in joining us in this effort.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense because when you're doing one project, then not everybody's going to know that happened. So,
yeah.
So when they come along, it's and I guess speaking of that, what are the mechanisms? How do you let people know? I mean, I guess I can see somebody saying I need a project without even knowing what you've done, which seems a little strange, but I'm sure that happens. Do you have a way of getting that word out to your state advisor? Well, I call them state advisors because that's what the term I'm used to with NGS. But
sure.
But does that go through them? Is that the way that works, or so people know that maybe there's something out there they can use?
Well, first of all, any question that you have, you can refer that to us at USGS. The answers are state liaisons are actually a great place to start. Also, you can call right at, or contact my office, or you can contact Vicki Lucas. If you go to the 3DEP website, actually, if you just Google USGS and 3DEP, you'll find a website that has a lot of resources on it. And I would suggest maybe you start there and look to the points of contact that are there. And definitely respond to the BAA, the broad agency announcement that's out there. Has a lot of detailed instructions on how to make yourself known to us.
You were talking about projects earlier, when you were talking about Shoreline, the thing that popped in my head was Digital Coast. That's another piece of legislation that we've been looking at and supporting. And, and so at the break, I asked you about that, and you said they do work together.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. Just very quick background. The Office of Management and Budget has created these geospatial themes, and they've named different agencies as civilian leaders of those different themes. And for elevation, the elevation theme, the USGS is named for terrestrial elevation, and NOAA is named for bathymetric elevation. And so it's really important that we work together, and we do. We meet with NOAA actually one-on-one, just between USGS and NOAA on a bi-monthly basis. We're very closely tied to them on all of their investments, GRAV-D, the Digital Coast, and all the other coastal mapping programs that they have. So, NOAA is a member of the 3DEP Executive Forum. They're part of this partnership. We often share in the funding of different data collects, we're very well coordinated on the Digital Coast issue. So I'm glad you asked that question.
one of the things that you were talking about earlier was that obviously this is not a flip the switch is going to happen overnight kind of thing, and so it takes obviously a significant amount of planning to move ahead and adapt as things change. And when you said when you mentioned adapting as things change, being in the surveying field and having to adapt from, as I've said on the radio show many times, methods people used 100 years before I got into the business to what's happening now. As that time spreads out, obviously technologies are going to change. What's the plan there? I mean, for example, I mean, we know what's happening now, the way the data is going to be collected. I guess there's a plan somehow that, wow, if this new thing comes along that's so great and wonderful, it's even better than what we have, that'll be involved in it as well, I suppose.
Yes, I think so. Part of the NIA study did look at a technology forecast, and there are some exciting things happening. And so maybe I could put it in the context of the medium to long term. You know, we've designed this program so that if it was fully funded, which is about $150 million a year, that we would cover the nation in 8 years. So over that time, we believe in terms of the technology forecast that there will definitely be some technology changes, perhaps some increases in efficiency, possibly flying a little higher and still getting the same resolution, which would drive the cost down. There's also this little thing out there called UAVs, which
I was gonna mention that.
Which has the potential to be very disruptive in a good way in terms of providing new ways to collect this data. But the way I think we're looking at it right now in terms of the medium term is really over the next eight years, we're not so sure that we see such dramatic changes in technology that it would change our approach. What we're looking for in this program over the next 8 years is what I would call a once-over. So it would be absolutely wonderful, and it would be a great economic boost to this country to have the entire country covered in high-resolution LIDAR once over. Now, one of the great values of LIDAR is change detection, as you know. And so certainly going back and doing recollects over coastlines that may have changed or forests that may have changed, or urban areas that may have changed. That's a really important feature of this program as well. But I think as far as the way we've designed the program and cast it today, we're not relying necessarily on major changes in technology to pull off that first once-over of the nation, and that's kind of the way we've designed it. Certainly be willing to and would love to take advantage of any efficiencies that come, but we're really letting the private sector kind of drive that.
And that makes perfect sense because you know they will.
Exactly.
Whatever comes along. And then again, you mentioned catastrophes earlier as well, and you were talking about the once-over. Obviously, changes that occur because of the catastrophes are going to have an impact on the program that you'll have to deal with as they occur.
That's right. I mean, you can never really truly anticipate what's going to happen, but you just know that something will. I mean, if you look back in time from events like the BP oil spill or the major hurricanes or the major wildfires, just last spring, the devastating landslide out in the state of Washington, mm-hmm. That's also a very interesting case of how we actually had a LIDAR collect in that valley taken in 2013, and immediately following the event went out and collected LIDAR and did some change analysis. And this was a very sophisticated new application for LIDAR, and it was fascinating some of the derivative maps that came out of that incident, but the ability to see how deep the slide was in different parts of the slide was really critical for the emergency responders in that case. And so certainly you can't predict when an event is going to come up, but you can be sure that it will, and it'll definitely drive your priorities when it happens.
So where this is probably an unfair question, I don't know, but in the process of moving ahead,
yes,
are we in the first early phase, or where do we stand?
Well, it's a great question. Thank you. It's early, but we're doing it, and we're being successful. That's the best part of it. Here we are in FY14. Within the USGS, we have $3.5 million dedicated to the acquisition of this data. As I mentioned, through our partnership program, bringing in dollars, you know, five to one or greater, you know, that pretty quickly turns into $16 million plus of new LIDAR coverage, or 56,000 square miles that we're going to be adding this year. We're also still working this major event, Hurricane Sandy impact area, an additional $7 million in acquisition funding in 13 and 14, at what we call fiscal years 13 and 14, is being flown, and we're supporting Alaska IFSAR, which is counts in our mind as part of the 3D elevation program. It's a little bit different technology, but it's getting high resolution elevation data up there. And so we're funding approximately $2.4 million in that area, but again, bringing a lot of partnership money to the table. So we're, by the time you add all of our partnership money, you know, we're in excess of probably $50 million as a nation acquiring LIDAR today in 14. In FY15, the president has proposed an increase for our program. It's a proposed $5.2 million program in the president's budget, and additional funding for LIDAR to be acquired over the Columbia River and Puget Sound and Alaska areas. We're very pleased that we have strong support of the president and of this administration. In fact, about 3 weeks ago now, the president made a major announcement of this program as it relates to building resilience, infrastructure resilience in the face of a changing climate in the future. And so although we're early in the program, we're active. And we're, as I mentioned, I'm chairing a federal executive committee that's pooling resources. We're asking for funding through the appropriations process. Our partners are asking for funding through the appropriations process, and we're gaining a lot of traction and a lot of support.
I hate to cut you off, Kevin, but yeah, we're at the end. It always goes too fast.
Yeah, sure.
But
does.
Before we have to go off, we got about 10 seconds. I just want to thank you for being with me today. It's been very enlightening, and hopefully, I can get you back again sometime soon, and we can have a report.
Sure, I'd love to, and it's a great
thank
opportunity.
You much.
Thanks.
Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.